Stu Does America.
Long title today. We got a new merch item available for you for election season. It's Joe Biden, elderly man with a poor memory. We should get a picture of this so we can show the people what they look like, what it looks like. You can get it on the mug. You can get it on the shirt. It's all up at StuDoesMerch.com. The code is Stu10. You'll save 10%. Got a brand new weight loss secret to share with you. Head over to YouTube.com/StuDoesAmerica. I'm not sure how much of this content you'll be able to take, but we're putting it up anyway. Meditatch Industries, available for you to see right now. Dave Marcus is here with the latest on the Israel-Hamas war. There has allegedly been a decision made about who will be the new James Bond. I can hear Twitter getting mad in the distance already. But we start by doing the left's bastardization of free speech. Longest word we've ever had in a title, bastardization. Lots of syllables, and for really dumb people on the left, they might not even understand what the word means. So let me explain a little bit. Supreme Court is wary of states' bid to limit federal contact with social media companies. This goes back to, you know, it's something we've talked about many times. Should the government be reaching out to social media companies behind the scenes and saying, hey, you should pull down this content that we don't like? I don't know. To me, it seems clear that there are little to no exceptions to the answer to that. Of course, the answer should be no, of course not. We have a First Amendment. The First Amendment in spirit, of course, in text says that Congress shall make no law, right? Yes, it's not Congress. We get that it's not Congress. Yes, it's not a law. But man, the spirit is just eviscerated here, if not completely violated. And I will say, today I'm just going to warn you, we're going to talk about Ketanji Brown Jackson. And when we do that on this show, there's something that we do, and it will ruin the rest of your week, but we're going to do it anyway.
Ketanji Brown Jackson, she is for real. Never had a justice quite like her. She's a former public defender. Ketanji Brown Jackson, she is for real. Harvard grad, judged at the circuit court and the trial court. She knows the score. Ketanji Brown Jackson, she is for real. Many a day has gone by with no black female voice. Want the most qualified? KBJ's a clear choice. Clerked at all three levels of the judiciary. That's way more than can be said for Miss Amy Coney. Barrett pushed it faster than Cancun Cruz when he fled. So spare us all that bullshit like you thought we'd forget. KBJ is the GOAT. Oh, you want an explanation? Let's look at how much they all did before the nominations. KBJ's years of experience, she judged for 8.9. Yeah, that's more than Thomas Roberts, Kagan, and Barrett combined.
I had forgotten about the rap part. I will. Holy, that is incredible. How do we not play that every day? Can we find out if she's done more songs? We need to know if, has she kept this career going? It's been years since this came out, and I need to know more. So please, that might be the monologue tomorrow. I don't know. I'm fascinated by it. Okay, let's play some actual Ketanji Brown Jackson. Here she is talking in this case about, I don't know. I mean, what? She's talking about free speech, and that's why we called it the bastardization of free speech. The First Amendment seems to mean nothing to these people, or at least they don't understand it. Here's KBJ, who is for real, explaining it.
Justice Jackson?
So my biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods. I mean, what would you have the government do? I've heard you say a couple times that the government can post its own speech, but in my hypothetical, kids, this is not safe, don't do it, is not going to get it done. And so I guess some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps to protect the citizens of this country, and you seem to be suggesting that that duty cannot manifest itself in the government encouraging or even pressuring platforms to take down harmful information. So can you help me? Because I'm really worried about that, because you've got the First Amendment operating in an environment of threatening circumstances from the government's perspective, and you're saying that the government can't interact with the source of those problems.
This is just sort of a fundamental misunderstanding of what the First Amendment does. And, you know, it's tough that this stuff is coming from a Supreme Court justice. It's tough to hear. It makes you cringe. But the First Amendment is a right given to the people. It's a protection from the government, not a right the government has. Now, people who work in the government have free speech rights themselves as individuals. But the First Amendment and free speech, it's designed to protect you from the government, quite clearly. And the fact that, like, she's worried about the government having the right to speak, and the way they're choosing to speak is to limit citizens' speech, it's mind-boggling. Now, look, I'm not going to slander Ketanji Brown Jackson. I'm not going to say she's as dumb as Sonia Sotomayor. We all know that's not true. That's unfair and wrong to say. But she's not exactly the brightest bulb, okay? At least in this particular case. Now, she's new enough that we don't really know where she winds up, but this sort of commentary makes me nervous as to where we're going. And of course, I have very little hope considering who picked her. By the way, do you remember who picked her and what he thinks about her?
Together, we put the first black woman on the United States Supreme Court.
Yeah! Skin color! Woo! Immutable characteristics! Woo-hoo-hoo!
I'm mildly prejudiced, but I think she's the brightest person on the course.
Oh, well, if he thinks it so, then it must be so. That's something you don't keep put on the resume. Joe Biden called me the brightest person on the Supreme Court. Like, you just toss that part of the resume out. You delete it. And in case you were, I mean, like, if you were confused, if you weren't sure who we were talking about there, let me just quickly remind you.
Ketanji Brown Jackson, she is for real. Never had a justice quite like her. She's a former public defender.
Defender.
Ketanji Brown Jackson, she is for real.
I just love how she's shoehorning defender into that. It's just so good. The rap, I think, is still available somewhere. We should make sure we make that available. There's a bunch of cases and a bunch of stuff going on with the Supreme Court and free speech. The Supreme Court hears a free speech case that united the NRA and the ACLU, unlikely bedfellows there. And it's interesting to see all these groups kind of come together and say, I'm a little skeptical about what the government is doing here. The NRA was clearly targeted multiple times by the government and continues to be to this day. A turbulent day for free speech in the Supreme Court, says the Washington Examiner, with plenty of evidence to back that up. And, you know, it is a turbulent day when even some of the conservatives seem to be, I mean, Amy Coney Barrett, who our former singer there was very critical of, had a lot to say about this as well and seems skeptical. And look, you could make the argument, and of course they did, that the First Amendment doesn't specifically prohibit this, but is the reason why you need to do something about that. If the Supreme Court can't come up with a decision here correctly, I think, that the First Amendment does limit this type of activity, but if they decide no, you got to pass a law to do something about this. We'll get into that in a second. But, like, let me ask you this. Where is the line? Where is the line from the government, going and saying, hey, coercion, basically, saying, hey, you can't put this up here. We're going to threaten you. We're going to come after you. We're going to punish you if you don't do what we say, or just asking nicely. And here's the thing. When it's the government, there is no line. There is no line. Let's say the nicest government employee in the world called up some nice employee at Twitter and said, hey, can you take down this post? We don't think it's right. And by the way, you're doing a great job. And of course, there's no threat here whatsoever. I might even send you a fruit basket, maybe one of those, bouquets of fruit. We'll get you that. It'll have the little pineapples cut into flower shapes, maybe a little dip in chocolate. We'll do all that for you. But can you please pull this down? Well, even if it was the nicest way in the world from the two nicest people, it's still coercion. If you were that Twitter employee and you're sitting there and you're going like, okay, I guess I got a call from Chuck Schumer's office and they want me to take this post down. What are you going to do? Maybe you, as a person who's focused on the First Amendment and the Constitution all the time, might say, this is wrong and I'm going to do something about it. Most people are going to be like, holy crap, I better do this or I'm going to get fired. All of it's coercion. You want to make a public statement? fine. You want to say, hey, this is what we recommend these companies do, and we can judge those companies based on what they do. That's probably okay. Doing it behind the scenes with no record of it is not okay. We need a law that specifically prohibits this. Really, honestly, no matter how this decision comes down, they should not be able to do it under most, if not all, circumstances. If you want to have a conversation about them needing to disclose this almost immediately afterward. Like, one example that Ketanji Brown Jackson did bring up was, what if it's like a doxing of a private citizen? We can't really say it publicly because it would draw attention to it. But if the FBI were to discover that, shouldn't they, be able to say, hey, pull this down, it's not right? And you can make an argument for that, but that should be, all these things should be disclosed if it's behind the scenes. If there's something that needs to be done, we should be able to judge that on a case-by-case basis, and we should know it almost immediately afterward. We should be able to call them out. Let's see if there's anything else on this that I had a bunch more on this. Let's see. Oh, Alito had a great point in there about how the government is set up with these companies. And as he points out, these discussions between the government and these social media companies make it seem like the social media company is a subordinate of the government. That's not true. That's not how this works. They work for us. Even the stupid social media companies, the government works for them, too. It's not a subordinate relationship the other way around. And, of course, who gets to determine what misinformation is a whole different question. The government would tell you they do. Elon Musk has put $44 billion or so on the line to say, actually, no, they don't. With some of the extra money I guess he had laying around, he decided to give some of it to Don Lemon, which does make me question his judgment. A lot of people call Elon Musk a genius. I think that's true in a lot of ways. Though you get a little knock on your record if you decide to hire Don Lemon even for a second, because everybody knows that Don Lemon is a moron. Don Lemon has released his heated Elon Musk interview on Elon Musk's website as well as YouTube. Yes, it was testy. What Elon Musk said in the testy interview with Don Lemon's new show, the former CNN anchor released a wide-ranging interview with the billionaire about business, politics, online hate speech, and more, says the New York Times. Now, we could rely on the New York Times for their analysis of this, but why not play a nice big chunk of it for you? This is the Don Lemon show, which now is not really even a show. I think he's just posting videos like anyone else on Twitter. He did not get the deal after all. And it was because of this interview. But I think people are misreporting why this occurred. Let me give you a couple of minutes. And again, this is a genius level guy. Everyone knows Elon Musk is a genius level guy trying to communicate with someone that has the IQ of somewhere between a carrot and a hamster. I don't know exactly where Don's IQ is these days. Here is their conversation. Watch.
We delete things if they are illegal.
But these have been up there for a while.
Are they illegal?
They're not illegal, but they're hateful, and they can lead to violence. As I just read to you, the shooters, in all of these mass shootings, attributed social media to radicalizing.
So Don, you love censorship, is what you're saying?
No, I don't love censorship.
Then why are you asking?
I believe in moderation, but I don't believe in
censorship. Moderation is a propaganda word for censorship.
Mm-hmm. But don't you think free speech is one thing, right? Or not
free speech? Look, if something's illegal, we're going to take it down. If it's not illegal, then we're putting our thumb on the scale and we're being censors.
You're putting your thumb on the scale for moderating hate speech? I mean, you don't put out child pornography.
It's illegal.
Some people would say that's considered censorship. I'm just saying, you...
No, I literally... Don, you're not... I literally said, if something is legal, okay, we will obviously remove it.
Okay.
But if it is not legal, the laws in this country are put forward by the citizens. We're a democracy. If those laws are put in place by the people, we adhere to those laws.
Okay,
and
I agree.
We adhere to the laws of others. If you go beyond the law, you're actually going beyond the will of the people.
Okay, agreed with the law. But if you are doing something that promotes hate and violence and ultimately leads to killing, you don't feel you have any responsibility not to do that?
What?
When the people who are doing it admittedly are saying...
There's articles all the time that lead to violence and killing. Shouldn't they? Like, you're applying a differential standard to...
But that would never be in mainstream media. These types of images, totally that type of language, those things would never be. We'd never, when I was in mainstream media, we'd never promote things that would be anti-Semitic. We would never promote things
that were anti-Semitic
either.
You ran the Charlottesville footage like crazy. I guarantee more people saw it on your stupid network than people actually bother to watch it on Twitter, except for maybe some haters that were trying to prove points. You know how many white supremacists were like, oh, I got to make sure I locate that Charlottesville Jews will not replace us video once again? You guys have been running that for 5 years. What do you mean you've never promoted it? Of course you have. Where do you think all the information for this stuff comes from? It comes from reporting. News coverage of, we've made this point 1,000 times. I'm flabbergasted by how stupid this man is. We have made this point 1,000 times. And this has been proven in study after study after study. Mainstream media coverage of mass shootings glorifying the shooters leads to more shootings. This has been shown 1,000,000 times. It's why we don't tell you the names of the shooters on the Blaze. We don't tell you that. Why? We're trying to do our little tiny part to make sure we don't cause mass shootings. You think CNN has that standard? No. Now, of course, he doesn't work for CNN anymore because he got fired, as he did from X. And this is very consistent with who Elon Musk is. If I read a biography of him recently, it was very extensive. And like one of the main themes you get out of it is he does not suffer fools lightly. The second an engineer suggests something that he doesn't like, the guy gets fired. Now, I don't know if that's how you want to run a business. It's how Elon's run his. And you know, obviously, he's had some really good results with some of the businesses. But like, look, the bottom line is he realized something different here. People are like, well, he was upset that Don Lemon gave him a tough interview. Don Lemon did not get fired because he had a tough interview. Don Lemon got fired because he gave a dumb interview. He's an idiot. That's why he got fired. Elon Musk couldn't believe he was about to hire a man with an IQ of a hamster. And that's why he got fired. Quite clearly. Now, of course, CNN is still, despite the fact that they're paying Don Lemon an ungodly amount of money to not do a show, they come on and talk about radicalized by the right. Elon Musk puts his conspiratorial thinking on display for the world to see. Is it really on the display? Is it? Also, Don Lemon made all sorts of wonderful requests. And this is a classic Don Lemon because he acted like he was this, you know, big guy for free speech and just what's right in America. Well, he actually demanded a Tesla Cybertruck, a $5 million advance, equity in X, all sorts of other things. He wanted a room at the Vidara in Las Vegas. By the way, quick Vegas hack for you. If you are trying to go to Vegas and your wife is like, I don't want to go to Vegas. I don't want anything to do with that. I don't want to go to a casino. But you kind of want to go to Vegas and do the Vegas stuff. Vidara is a great, great hack. Basically, it's a hotel, really nice, huge rooms, awesome rooms, and it's like a spa hotel. It doesn't have a casino in it. You might be like, well, I don't want to go to one. Yeah, but you go down the stairs, you walk across like one little driveway, one little circle where they pull out like a valet area, and you're right in the Aria. It's fantastic. So highly would recommend it if you're trying to bribe your wife to go. Anyway, Don Lemon could get a huge payout from Elon Musk. And that's amazing because this guy is turning into, I mean, I said he's an idiot and he is, but he's turning into like a backup quarterback where he never actually plays but gets paid constantly. Because if that works out, if he gets to sue again and get money again, which probably the courts will agree with him, he will now have two deals, which he's blown up on with his own behavior and actions and is still getting paid millions of dollars. So, I mean, I guess he can't be that dumb, right? Our society can be really dumb for allowing that sort of nonsense, but maybe Don Lemon himself at least is good at taking people's money. And you wouldn't be surprised, obviously, by his opinions about how much your tax rate should be. The fact that he's good at taking other people's money, I guess, should not surprise us. But the bottom line here is that both Elon Musk and at least Alito on the Supreme Court are fighting for some version of actual free speech. And it used to be the type of thing, you see the ACLU and the NRA working together, used to be the type of thing that everyone left and right could agree on. Well, that time is dead, and unless we fight for it, it'll be gone forever. you might look around the world today and think something is up. Something big, something suspicious. You can't quite pinpoint it. You can't quite deny it either. Are you feeling that way? Are you trusting your gut? I mean, look, you don't have to know what it is. You don't have to even be right about it. But being prepared either way is, of course, the right move to go forward. If you have a family, you want to make sure you're prepared for whatever is going to go down. And My Patriot Supply is here to help you with that. Since 2008, My Patriot Supply has helped millions of Americans prepare for an uncertain future. Many of them choose the three-month emergency food kit. 22 food and drink varieties. There's no food boredom. With over 2,000 calories a day, there will be no starvation, which I've heard is important. I've heard that's a good thing. Sealed inside a ultra-durable four-layer package, these are ready-hour meals, and they last up to 25 years in storage. You can stock up on all the food kits your family needs at the website preparewithstew.com. Preparewithstew.com. Each kit, you'll get $200 off right now. Protect yourself. Protect the people that you love. Get your kits at preparewithstew.com. They'll ship fast and free. Preparewithstew.com. I want to bring in Dave Marcus. He's a columnist for Fox News and The Daily Mail. He's the author of Charade, The COVID Lies That Crushed a Nation, and probably best known for his appearances with me on Megyn Kelly's show. Dave, welcome to the program, man. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I wanted to bring you on because I've been watching you tweet and cover what's going on in Israel. And I just feel like the Israel-Hamas thing, I feel like I'm in another world. I don't understand how the media is covering it. I don't get why we're so critical of Israel and we're so forgiving to the area that produced and elected Hamas to come in and do everything they did on October 7th. I just feel like I'm in an alternate universe.
It does. It does feel that way. And I think that a lot of people in Israel certainly feel that way. I had a column up on Sunday at Fox about my experience. I spent the last week or so in Tel Aviv. And really, the theme of the piece was, in Israel, it's still October 7th. I mean, I saw all of the horrible footage. I went down to a kibbutz called Kfar Aza on the Gaza border, where 63 people were massacred. I was at the, you know, where at the Nova Music Festival. And I mean, this was pure evil. You could feel it, especially at the kibbutz. But the other thing you could feel was how inspiring the Israeli people are. At that kibbutz, only one couple, a couple in their 60s, has moved back. And we said to the guy, like, why did you come back here when there's so much devastation? And he said, I can't be a refugee in my own country. I mean, these are the good guys here. And when you look at the abject barbarism of October 7th, the fact that anybody would be sort of saying that there's any sort of like relativism between Hamas and Israel, it is crazy.
It's amazing. I mean, you keep hearing the reports of like, well, Israel's bringing in a bunch of aid. Their aid trucks get attacked. People wind up getting hurt, sometimes killed in these situations. And the coverage is just nonstop how bad Israel is and how genocidal they seem to be, which is, I mean, it's a weird way to pull off a genocide, to bring aid into an area. I mean, that's a strange strategy for a genocide. But I mean, I get to the point where on most issues, when I'm thinking about what the left says, you know, minimum wage, I don't agree with their opinion on minimum wage, but I get it. I understand their argument. I don't even understand the argument on this one, Dave.
No, I don't either, because the bottom line is, I talk to a lot of Israeli officials, including a member of the war cabinet, and people from different sides of Israeli politics. The one thing that they all agreed on is that whatever solution we come to here in regard to the end of the war, it cannot be one in which Hamas feels like it's moved the ball forward in its ultimate game, which is to destroy the state of Israel. And that is Hamas's goal. I mean, it's their stated goal. That's what from the river to the sea means. So for Israelis and for the Israeli government, if you get to some kind of ceasefire and Hamas and Hezbollah and Iran feel like they've moved towards that goal, they're going to do it again and again and again. And right now, Hezbollah in Lebanon has 65,000 precision-guided missiles aimed at Tel Aviv and Haifa. So, you know, this is a very real situation for Israelis. They're not going to back down. It doesn't matter what Joe Biden or Chuck Schumer says. This is existential for them.
You were in the areas where this stuff happened. And, you know, it's one of those things that you can read about stuff, you can write about stuff, but actually going to the place gives you perspective you can't get any other way. What was it like being there? And what did you feel? What did you see?
On the Lebanon border, I could feel why Israelis are so scared. There we had to wear flak jackets and helmets, and 60,000 people have been evacuated from their homes, and they have no idea, you know, for 5 months, and they have no idea when they're going back because Hezbollah just rains down these rockets and destroys homes. The Gaza border was where the massacres took place, and that was an entirely different feeling. You know, as a writer, your job really is to kind of take off your emotional and mental armor and let things, you know, soak things up like a sponge and then be a conduit to your readers. Sometimes that's beautiful and wonderful. This was about the hardest experience with that I've ever had in my life. I walked into the very small home of a 23-year-old couple who died in their safe room. There were just hundreds of bullet holes all over the wall. Clearly, the two of them had gotten into their safe room. The terrorists broke in there. And you kind of have to imagine what that must have been like. And the whole place, you know, you watch like a horror movie and there's like, you know, some chill of evil that, and you see the character shudder. It did. It had that kind of psychic energy. It was like no other place I'd ever been. The Nova Music Festival was similar. You could just feel the ghosts and the evil of the people who created those ghosts.
You tweeted something that I thought was very interesting. I just watched the IDF's latest video footage of October 7th. If that happened in the United States, our response would leave a million people dead. Israel's restraint is almost unfathomable. This is the exact opposite narrative that we're hearing from the media. But, it's hard to doubt. I mean, if this happened in the United States, there would not be calls for restraint. There would not be calls for, aid to be flown in to the people who had done these things. I mean, this would be a totally different world after a day like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the example is 9/11, and, you know, there will be historical arguments for hundreds of years about the American response to 9/11. There are certainly plenty of people in the world who think that we were engaged in war crimes. There are certainly plenty of people here in America who think that, you know, Donald Rumsfeld and George W. Bush botched the whole thing. I have sort of mixed feelings about it. But I will say this, after September 11th, on September 12th, the American government, George W. Bush, they had one job, and it was to make sure that it never happens again. And it hasn't happened again. And I think that is absolutely the attitude that the Israelis are looking at this with. That this crossed so many lines. And look, you know, Iran right now could be saying, okay, that went too far. We're pulling all of our support for Hamas, right? Russia could say that. China could say that. They're not. So, I mean, this is a civilizational battle, and I think Americans need to wake up and sort of decide which team they want to be on.
Yeah. I mean, even the UN, who had an opportunity to condemn Hamas, just a meaningless statement in a sentence, they voted it down. They would not condemn Hamas and what they did on that day. It's just absolutely amazing. Before we go, Dave, I want to go to one other topic. This is something you actually wrote months ago, but it pops into my mind often, and I think it's really interesting. It was a piece you did for the Daily Mail back in August about the Concorde, and not really about the Concorde, the plane, of course, but about what it says about America. And it's a great piece. I encourage everyone to go read it. We'll tweet it out at Studios America. But it talks about how, just reading quickly, for 30 years, until it was retired in 2003, the Concorde was a placeholder, a promise of more to come. 20 listless years later, there's nothing close to it. And you think about this, like, we had this thing that was going supersonic flights, like, it wasn't going to be the final place. Like, these things improve over time, and usually it feels like that's the case. But now we're in a period where we just kind of gave up on that, and it seems like this story is being echoed throughout America. It's almost a different profile of what we thought America was.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I was thinking about that piece, because my editor and I went back and forth on that for a while because we knew there was something there and we weren't quite what it was and, you know, sure what it was. And where we kind of landed at was like, the United States used to be much more aspirational, right? It's like we used to have these world fairs, and you'd go to the world fair in Chicago or someplace, and you'd go to the Hall of the Future. And it's like, oh my goodness, like this is what it's going to be like. Today, instead of world fairs, we have, you know, Silicon Valley product launches, and they suck. And they're not about the future. They're about like what you can go buy at the Apple store tomorrow or wherever. I do think we've lost some of that spirit. You know, I'll say, like, I'm very hard on Elon Musk in regard to, like, the way he handles X. I don't think he's done a good job of that at all. But I will say, as far as, like, SpaceX and Tesla go, he's got some of that vibe and that energy. And I really applaud him for that because, you know, he's one of those are two of the few places where I still see that. And we could use a lot more of it.
Yeah. You mentioned in the piece, you know, what advancements have we made in the past 5 decades? You're probably holding them in your hand. Smartphones, the internet, social media, streaming services. The only machines that get better and more affordable are the ones that keep us tethered to our couches. First of all, that's deep, Dave. You're screwing with my whole worldview. But also, it's like true. It feels like we just, I mean, you walk around any restaurant, you look at people sitting across from each other, not even talking to each other. We've like eliminated the human experience. And now we've got like stuff like Apple Vision Pro, which is going to make it even more and more disconnecting from human interaction. It doesn't feel like the right path.
No, I don't think it is. You know, I think that I remember that there was a point in 2020 during COVID and I had just started writing my book and I was trying to figure out, like, you know, do these tech companies and stuff, do they really think that we need to be in lockdown, or are they doing this because it helps their bottom line? And I kind of landed at the idea that, like, when people or entities are dealing with a 50-50 choice, and I'm willing to operate in good faith that it was maybe a 50-50 choice, we often find ways to do the thing that's going to be most beneficial to us. And I think that our biggest growing corporations like Google and Amazon and all of these things, that's where the money is. The money is not at, you know, taking your family out to the movies and you know, ice cream after. The money is in streaming your movie at home and ordering the ice cream via Instacart or something like that. I don't think it's a great direction.
The piece, I encourage you to read it. It's called, and Daily Mail has a long title, so bear with me. 50 years ago, Concorde first scorched across the Atlantic. Now snail-paced planes are a dystopian nightmare, and it takes hours to charge electric cars to go 50 miles. That's the headline. It's a great,
yeah, I know.
Great read.
Sometimes I've written columns that aren't as long as Daily Mail headline. I don't know. It's the British style, you know.
It is.
And I used to write for the New York Post, which is like the exact opposite, and in two words could do everything.
Yeah.
So
it's an amazing two different styles. Marcus, thanks so much for coming on. He's a columnist for Fox News and the Daily Mail. Be sure to grab a copy of the book he was just discussing, Charade, the COVID Lies That Crushed a Nation. And I'll be on with him again in a few weeks with Megyn Kelly as well. Dave, thanks so much for taking a couple of minutes and coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, man.
I mean, we were just talking about where our country is and where it's going. I mean, do you remember a time when you could just get any medication you needed? That felt like the normal state of affairs in America. And over time, we've seen a lot of medication shortages. It was first the COVID thing, and then there was the supply chain stuff. And now I don't know what the problem is. It just seems like we just can't do the things we used to do. You got to have medications to be prepared for whatever comes next. And Jace Case is the way you can do that. Jace Case is a personalized emergency medication kit. It contains 5 essential antibiotics, which treat the most common and deadly bacterial infections. We get away with a lot of stuff that we used to really die from or be massively injured from. These diseases that, you know, science came along and capitalism worked together and we had plentiful medications like antibiotics, and now they're harder to find. You got to have some sort of stash, really. And the Jace Case can do this easily. You don't have to worry about it. They make it super simple. You can choose the one, whatever medications, add-ons that are best for you. Jace is simple. Go online, fill out a form, get the prescription, and get the life-saving medications delivered right to your door. Jace Case gives you peace of mind, and you don't have to worry about where your medication is going to come from in case of an emergency. Go to jacemedical.com, enter the code STU at checkout, and you'll get a discount on your order. The promo code is STU at jacemedical.com. jasemedical.com, J-A-S-E medical.com. It's the Jace case from Jace Medical. So we know now who the new James Bond is going to be, I guess. At least the offer's on the table. It's something you probably want to actually accept. It's someone named Aaron Taylor Johnson. Of course, you know him from such super, super classics as Kick-Ass. I do remember him as the main character of Kick-Ass, but I thought he was like a nerdy guy. It doesn't seem like to me to strike a James Bond vibe at all. Then also Godzilla, the one with Bryan Cranston in it from 2014-ish. And also from perhaps the worst thing that happened during the COVID era, Tenet. So that's him. By the way, he's married. And here's his wife, which I was told by my producers to show this photo today, I guess because he's a lot younger than her. I guess that's kind of the point. Now, he's 33, and they apparently met like 15 years ago, so you can do the math on that one. Almost crossed the line you're not supposed to cross, but I guess that one's okay. By the way, another line you're definitely not supposed to cross. We have a pre-cancellation alert. We're trying to keep on top of this stuff, so if someone's going to get canceled, you know about it in advance. And I'm a little concerned here for Eric McCormick. Will and Grace star Eric McCormick says straight actors playing gay characters is part of the gig. Now, we all know that's not true. You must be gay to play someone who is gay. I'm pretty sure if you're gay, you can play someone who is straight. I'm not 100% sure on that one, but I'm pretty sure that's the way it works. But what Eric McCormick is arguing for here is, and I don't, if you can conceptualize this, a person who would pretend, if you will, to be something that he is not, okay? So, like, I mean, we could go crazy with this stuff. I mean, like, what if you're making a movie about Theodore Roosevelt and you have someone who is not Theodore Roosevelt playing the role of Theodore Roosevelt? Think of any historical figure. Obviously, the way you make those movies is you get the actual historical figure to act as themselves. Anyone else is, you're basically taking someone else's culture and identity, which is wrong. Some people describe this process as acting, but I think it's just wrong. And I hate to explain to Eric McCormick, who either was Will or Grace or maybe someone else in the cast, understand what kind of world you're in, okay? What you're doing is wrong. Pretending that you're someone else is a crime, not acting. So I've had Blaze Media's Eric July on the show a bunch of times. Most recently, yesterday, and it was a great conversation. You should go back and watch that one from yesterday's episode. We talked a lot about his independent comic book company, Ripaverse. Now, Ripaverse Comics is the product of a guy who loves comics, loves the culture, and decided he was going to do something against what was happening inside the industry, which was, you know, everything was turning woke, as you might expect, and it was just annoying him. He was like, I don't want to make this big, like, right-wing comic or libertarian comic. I just want to make a good freaking product, and I want people to understand that it's just there for their entertainment to enjoy. Well, he started it out, and it just blew up. Ripaverse has just been absolutely huge. They've raised millions and sold millions and millions of dollars worth of, content. And now they've launched Yaira Number One. This is their brand new book out from Ripaverse. Yaira Number One. It's a 90-page graphic novel. It promises to wow you with stunning cinematic action throughout and answer burning questions about the Ripaverse's resident femme fatale. This is take a minute to go back and watch the interview from yesterday. It goes through all of it, how it happened and where it is. They've had just an incredible run of success. I'm so happy for Eric. He's just such a good dude. The pre-order campaign ends May 25th, and orders will go out immediately. Just visit ripaverse.com/Yaira. ripaverse.com/Yaira. It's Y-A-I-R-A. ripaverse.com/Yaira. Pre-order now. Yaira, Number One. Let's take some time and look at A Tale of Two Cities. Here we begin in D.C., where Mayor Bowser says, don't be so down on DC after the crime spike. Now look, a lot of people will find themselves getting a little down post-stabbing. And it's important to understand you should be cheerful in a moment when your rib cage has been severed and maybe some of your internal organs are beginning to leak out onto the cold pavement in Washington, D.C. And as, you know, maybe your pancreas is sitting on the sidewalk, a homeless vagrant comes along and takes a bite out of it right in front of you as you fade away into a sad demise. But chin up. You know? Chin up. The other city is Paris, where there is going to be so much sex. It's basically nonstop porn. Paris has lifted the intimacy ban, which surely was completely effective last time. And they had the COVID-19 thing going on. They're like, you can't hook up as much as you normally do. Now, of course, what you have is a situation where they build a city of temporary invitees, mostly in their 20s, who are in very good shape right next to each other. And chaos ensues. Just entire villages of children are born after this, I assume. But hopefully we have those abortion rights in place in Paris. We can knock them out really quick, you know, because we don't want those kids being born. But luckily, they also have 300,000 condoms. Now, how long is the Olympics? It's only a couple of weeks still, right? Like, we haven't extended this to a year, but apparently 300,000 condoms, the necessary number of condoms to just prevent nonstop, very athletic children from being born. So congratulations to Paris, and less of a congratulations to Washington, D.C. Vivek Ramaswamy, Donald Trump, the ultimate pair. Are you excited for it? If you are, sorry, it's not going to happen. Donald Trump has said to Vivek, no, thank you. We're not going to be doing that right now. No VP slot for Vivek Ramaswamy. Maybe getting a cabinet role, as he's been pretty loyal to Donald Trump. It's obviously very important to Trump when he makes these picks. One of the things they're talking about is him for Department of Homeland Security, which is interesting. I mean, it wouldn't be the first thing I'd come up with. With Vivek Ramaswamy, he's, you know, obviously qualified for a lot of different jobs. That's an interesting one, though. I mean, if anything, you'd think that might be his, you know, national defense might be a weakness if he was going to run for president. He doesn't really have all that much experience in that world. But who knows? We will see if he does that. And of course, their opponent, Joe Biden, he is running for president as well. And also running to have a fifth granddaughter, which he doesn't think he has. He keeps saying only four. He does not acknowledge his fifth granddaughter again, which is, of course, fathered out of wedlock by Hunter. Say her name. Say her name, Joe. He won't. He doesn't care. He keeps saying he has four grandkids when he actually has five. It's really a despicable thing that no one seems to care about. But what are you going to do? I guess we're the only ones going to hold people's feet to the fire. Same thing on the border, by the way. The third installment of Blaze Originals is up on Blaze TV Plus. If you're a Blaze TV Plus subscriber, you can get it. Texas versus the Feds, how the elites use the border against us. Jason Buttrell is part of this. He's on the road with the Take Our Border Back convoy. And run to the front line, met these people, tried to tell the truth about what's going on down there. There's a lot of stuff that happened that he didn't expect. And it's a crazy, crazy story. BlazeOriginals.com. Use the code BORDERCRISIS. You get $30 off your Blaze TV subscription. Again, it's BlazeOriginals.com. The code is BORDERCRISIS. If you're not a Blaze TV Plus subscriber, you can get that there. And if you want to get some merch for the election, we've got one for you. Check it out. It is right here, StuDoesMerch.com. It's Joe Biden, elderly man with a poor memory. The cup, the shirt, all of it. Use the code STU10 and you'll save 10%.